Preface. 1. As it is my intention within a very short time to confront my fellow men with the very greatest demand that has ever yet been made upon them, it seems to me above all necessary to declare here who and what I am. As a matter of fact, this ought to be pretty well known already, for I have not held my tongue about myself. But the disparity which obtains between the greatness of my task and the smallness of my contemporaries is revealed by the fact that people have neither heard me nor yet seen me. I live on my own self-made credit, and it is probably only a prejudice to suppose that I am alive at all. I do but require to speak to any one of the scholars who come to the Oberengadin in the summer in order to convince myself that I am not alive. Under these circumstances, it is a duty, and one against which my customary reserve, and to still a greater degree, the pride of my instincts, rebel, to say, "Listen, for I am such and such a person. For heaven's sake, do not confound me with anyone else." 2. I am, for instance, in no wise a bogeyman or moral monster. On the contrary, I am the very opposite in nature to the kind of man that has been honoured hitherto as virtuous. Between ourselves, it seems to me that this is precisely a matter on which I may feel proud. I am a disciple of the philosopher Dionysus, and I would prefer to be even a satyr than a saint. But just read this book. Maybe I have here succeeded in expressing this contrast in a cheerful and, at the same time, sympathetic manner. Maybe this is the only purpose of the present work. The very last thing I should promise to accomplish would be to improve mankind. I do not set up any new idols. May old idols only learn what it costs to have legs of clay. To overthrow idols — idols is the name I give to all ideals — is much more like my business. In proportion as an ideal world has been falsely assumed, reality has been robbed of its value, its meaning, and its truthfulness. The true world and the apparent world, in plain English, the fictitious world and reality. Hitherto, the lie of the ideal has been the curse of reality. By means of it, the very source of mankind's instincts has become mendacious and false, so much so that those values have come to be worshipped which are the exact opposite of the ones which would ensure man's prosperity, his future, and his great right to a future. 3. He who knows how to breathe in the air of my writings is conscious that it is the air of the heights, that it is bracing. A man must be built for it, otherwise the chances are it will chill him. The ice is near. The loneliness is terrible. But how serenely everything lies in the sunlight! How freely one can breathe! How much one feels lies beneath one! Philosophy, as I have understood it hitherto, is a voluntary retirement into regions of ice and mountain peaks, the seeking out of everything strange and questionable in existence, everything upon which, hitherto, morality has set its ban. Through long experience, derived from such wanderings in forbidden country, I acquired an opinion very different from that which may seem generally desirable of the causes which hitherto have led to men's moralizing and idealizing. The secret history of philosophers, the psychology of their great names, was revealed to me. How much truth can a certain mind endure? How much truth can it dare? These questions became for me ever more and more the actual test of values. Error, the belief in the ideal, is not blindness. Error is cowardice. Every conquest, every step forward in knowledge, is the outcome of courage, of hardness towards oneself, of cleanliness towards oneself. I do not refute ideals. All I do is to draw on my gloves in their presence. Nitimur invetitum. With this device, my philosophy will one day be victorious. For that which has hitherto been most stringently forbidden is, without exception, truth. 4. In my life work, my Zarathustra holds a place apart. With it, I gave my fellow men the greatest gift that has ever been bestowed upon them. This book, the voice of which speaks out across the ages, is not only the loftiest book on earth, literally the book of mountain air. The whole phenomenon, mankind, lies at an incalculable distance beneath it. But it is also the deepest book, born of the inmost abundance of truth, an inexhaustible well into which no pitcher can be lowered without coming up again laden with gold and with goodness. Here it is not a prophet who speaks, one of those gruesome hybrids of sickness and will to power, whom men called founders of religion. If a man would not do a sad wrong to his wisdom, he must above all give proper heed to the tones, the halcyonic tones, that fall from the lips of Zarathustra. The most silent words are harbingers of the storm. Thoughts that come on dove's feet lead the world. The figs fall from the trees, they are good and sweet, and when they fall their red skins are rent. A north wind am I unto ripe figs. Thus like figs do these precepts drop down to you, my friends. Now drink their juice and their sweet pulp. It is autumn all around, and clear sky and afternoon. No fanatic speaks to you here. This is not a sermon. No faith is demanded in these pages. From out an infinite treasure of light and well of joy, drop by drop, my words fall out. A slow and gentle gait is the cadence of these discourses. Such things can reach only the most elect. It is a rare privilege to be a listener here. Not everyone who likes can have ears to hear Zarathustra. Is not Zarathustra, because of these things, a seducer? But what, indeed, does he himself say when for the first time he goes back to his solitude? Just the reverse of that which any sage, saint, saviour of the world, and other decadent would say. Not only his words, but he himself is other than they. Alone do I now go, my disciples. Get ye also hence, and alone. Thus would I have it. Verily I beseech you, take your leave of me, and arm yourselves against Zarathustra, and better still, be ashamed of him. Maybe he hath deceived you. The knight of knowledge must be able not only to love his enemies, but also to hate his friends. The man who remaineth a pupil requiteth his teacher but ill. And why would ye not pluck at my wreath? Ye honour me. But what if your reverence should one day break down? Take heed, lest a statue crush you. Ye say ye believe in Zarathustra? But of what account is Zarathustra? Ye are my believers, but of what account are all believers? Ye had not sought yourselves when ye found me. Thus do all believers. Therefore is all believing worth so little. Now I bid you lose me, and find yourselves, and only when you have all denied me will I come back unto you. Friedrich Nietzsche. On this perfect day, when everything is ripening, and not only the grapes are getting brown, a ray of sunshine has fallen on my life. I looked behind me, I looked before me, and never have I seen so many good things all at once. Not in vain have I buried my 44th year today. I had the right to bury it. That in it which still had life has been saved and is immortal. The first book of the Transvaluation of All Values, the Songs of Zarathustra, the Twilight of the Idols, my attempt to philosophize with a hammer, all these things are the gift of this year, and even of his last quarter. How could I help being thankful to the whole of my life? That is why I am now going to tell myself the story of my life. End of preface.